Hi, this is Jonathan from Lewis Jewelers. If you're in the market for a diamond, we can make the experience easy and stress-free. Not to mention, we can save you time and money. As a general manager, one of my roles is to hand-select every diamond that comes into our store. Don't shop alone. Come see me or one of my trusted advisors and find the perfect diamond today. Where Ann Arbor gets engaged, Lewis Jewelers.
Welcome on into the Wolverine.com podcast. Clayton Safey here with Anthony Broom. Chris Ballas not with us today, but we still have a lot to get to. The NFL draft, Michigan spring ball, a little bit of cleanup, you know, look back at spring ball as a whole. We did the spring game recap on Monday, and then we will end with a little bit of basketball, as is not tradition because it's only a month old, but I mean, just every day it feels like Dusty May is getting a commitment. Didn't get one yesterday, but he did get one a couple days ago. Lorenzo Cason, who will be a freshman next year, guard out of Florida. We'll talk about him towards the end and more movement on the Michigan basketball roster beyond just that addition. But first, AB, you are headed down to Detroit later in the day. It's exciting for NFL fans, for Michigan fans that could see 15, you know, plus guys go in the NFL draft starting tonight with Thursday night, the first round.
You know, it's interesting, like the draft is, it's Detroit, the city of Detroit is hosting the draft, but in a lot of ways, it feels like the culmination of what obviously Michigan season was. They're going to have all these guys called this weekend. It's a culmination of obviously what the Detroit Lions themselves did this past season. You know, I love the draft so much. It is the peak of football optimism because you have all of these guys that you rooted for in college, and they're, you know, then you have, you know, mix in a team, the team you root for, and these are the guys that are going to help you win a Super Bowl, right? Everyone thinks that. So it's just, you know, it's the one place where, and people are united too. That Roger Goodell is going to come out to the podium tonight in downtown Detroit, 300,000 people there to a chorus of boos. It is going to be glorious, and the state of Michigan deserves this. City of Detroit deserves this. And with the Michigan Wolverines, given what they earned, you know, this is another, it's a victory lap for them this entire weekend. And it's going to start tonight when their quarterback comes off the board, probably somewhere in those first 10 picks. So it's going to be so much fun. You know, again, being a draft guy or, you know, I remember going down to Ford Field with my dad when the drafts were still on Saturday, sitting on the turf at Ford Field, staring up at the screen while the draft was going on. This is going to be pretty awesome. And I think, you know, we have the Michigan ties to it. We have the local ties to it. I think this is going to be a weekend for the books for football fans in the state of Michigan.
Could you imagine if Tony Petitti came out instead of Roger Goodell, the boo that he would get?
They might march him right over to the Detroit River. I don't know. I think that might be the last we see of him if that were to happen.
That's true. So, yeah, it's going to be exciting. Obviously, you know, most people have an NFL team. You have your college team that you're watching. And you said it. I mean, J.J. McCarthy, I just put up, I guess it's scheduled in our world. But, you know, by the time this podcast comes out, our final mock draft roundup is out there. J.J. McCarthy goes to the Vikings in 8 out of 13 of the mock drafts that came out in the last 24 hours. Just stuck to the last minute projections. Now that comes at varying different picks, right? Because the Vikings have the 11th pick, but they could move up, and a lot of people are projecting that they're going to do that to pick J.J. McCarthy. Also, one mock draft with him, number 3 to the New England Patriots. You know, some others have the Vikings staying at number 11 and grabbing him. Some have the Giants grabbing him. At number 6, Pete Prisco of CBS Sports has the Patriots moving back, Giants moving up to 3, grabbing Drake May, and the Patriots taking J.J. McCarthy at number 6. So there are all these different possibilities, but there are really a few teams that seem to be in the mix for J.J. McCarthy: the Minnesota Vikings, the Denver Broncos, and the New York Giants, who, by the way, J.J. said is the team he spent the most time with, the Giants, which is kind of interesting. They may be the dark horse in this race, but regardless, it's pretty much a guarantee that J.J. McCarthy is going to be Michigan's first round quarterback since his coach, Jim Harbaugh, who went number 26 overall to the Bears in 1987, who may be trading his number five pick to a team that ends up selecting J.J. McCarthy, and very significant as well. The name Forrest Evashevsky is going to come up potentially tonight, and that is Michigan's only other first-round quarterback besides Jim Harbaugh to this point. J.J. is going to join him. He went number 10 overall to the Washington Redskins in 1941. The number one overall pick that draft was Tom Harmon, Heisman Trophy winner for Michigan. And then there was another guy, George Seatthamel. I don't know how to exactly pronounce it, but he was the number 19 overall pick. That was technically in the third round because there were less teams back then. That was in 1943. So a little history lesson, a little trivia. People can, you know, quiz their friends. But either way, like JJ is going to be in some rarefied air with Forrest Evashevsky, Jim Harbaugh, a pretty good company there.
No disrespect to Forrest Evashevsky, but I excluded him from the draft preview I just put together. So I'll have to update
that. Not common era. It's not the common era, but it's still, it's
not
nearly
a common era at all.
Yeah, over 80 years ago.
Yeah, it's going to be, regardless, he's going to be the highest drafted Michigan quarterback ever, is what's going to happen. I assume it happens in those first 10 picks. Again, the New England Patriots kind of hold the cards to everything here, because if they just sit at three and take Drake May, which a lot of people, you know, as we sit here recorded, a lot can change in the next, you know, whatever, 10 hours or so as we're recording this morning. But yeah, it kind of seems like the draft sort of starts with that number three pick. Someone's either coming up for Drake May, New England's taking Drake May. It just seems like the buzz is that if someone's going to move up for McCarthy, it's probably more in that like 6 to 10 range. Which maybe makes him a little more attainable for a team like the Denver Broncos. The Raiders need a quarterback as well. The Vikings, you know, secured that extra first-round pick, but might not have to use it unless they go up for May. So it's going to be interesting. And again, you know, when it comes down to team fits, you know, that's the thing about these teams that have the first, you know, 5, 6, 7 picks of this draft is that they're not the most ideal situations to operate out of. You know, I'm not crazy about the idea of McCarthy going to the Giants, only because I just feel like that media market will just not eat him alive. I think he's, wherever he goes, I think he'll be able to handle it. But, you know, a place like Minnesota, as much as it would pain us, our little NFC North hearts, to see him there. I mean, I feel like you throw to Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison, that's a hell of a start to your career, right? With the infrastructure you have there, you have a former NFL quarterback in your head coach, your quarterback's coach is Josh McCown. So yeah, I mean, somewhere like Minnesota or Denver feels like it works for him. I'd be worried about New England just because Michigan man following in the steps of Tom Brady, it feels like they need a lot more than just a quarterback. So to me, you know, when it comes down to what his best fit is, I really do think it's probably Minnesota or Denver. And Denver kind of scares me a little bit too, because Sean Payton's the type of guy that could cut and run, you know, at any time. And especially if they move up and they kind of exhaust their assets to come get him. But yeah, it's been so gratifying since he declared in January to, oh, well, he's barely a second round pick, or maybe he's a late first round pick. And then everyone kind of catches up in real time to the type of things that we've seen all season long. Like, Michigan's offense went to the next level because of J.J. McCarthy, not because, you know, they fit him into the confines of their system and he was a game manager. They took that next step from, you know, Shea Patterson's, Cade McNamara's of the world, because of what his skill set brought. And, you know, I think the fact that he did operate out of an NFL system, essentially, you know, with what they did offensively, I can't speak enough to how highly I think of that guy. I think he really is the total package. And there are no sure things in the NFL, but when you look at these quarterbacks that they're talking about going in the first round, I don't have much hesitation. I feel like maybe he has the highest floor of any of them. Well, I don't know what the ceiling is, but I think he's going to win a lot of games for someone wherever he winds up.
Yeah, I'm excited for him. And you're right. Situation is a big part of it. And I think it was Todd McShay was saying this on the Ryan Russillo podcast a couple of days ago, that he thinks J.J. McCarthy might be the fourth quarterback off the board, which is, you know, clearly pretty much the consensus at this point, other than maybe, you know, a couple outliers that have him going number three to the Patriots. But he may win rookie of the year, because he'd step into a situation where Minnesota last year was pretty much competent quarterback play away from really competing for a playoff spot. They were already in the mix, you know, going late into the year for a playoff spot. They have great receivers. You laid out the situation that they have there. So that would be a good one. Hope he lands in a good spot. And he could become the next in a long line of successful Michigan quarterbacks in the NFL. Jim Harbaugh, Elvis Gerback, Todd Collins, Brian Greasy, Tom Brady. I mean, Chad Henne had a really long career and had some nice moments, really important moments, even for the Chiefs late in his career in the playoffs. Those guys all stuck around for a long time. Those guys all had success. And I think JJ McCarthy could be next to do that. Michigan could have another first round pick on Thursday night. Mikey Sanders still slipped in a mock draft at number 31 overall to the San Francisco 49ers. NBC Sports had that projection. That was the only one I saw with another Michigan guy in there. But, you know, we're not going to go through all 20 guys because we do have to get to the million-dollar question of will Michigan break the draft record. But some of the other top prospects for day one, day two, Roman Wilson, Chris Jenkins, Blake Corum, Mikey Sanders still, and Junior Colson, who's a lot of people have as the number one off-ball linebacker in the draft. But, yeah, it's just going to be exciting. And then you think of the positions, too. A lot of Michigan guys have gone to the draft over the years or going to the NFL. 53 draft picks so far under Jim Harbaugh. He's going to push 70, close to 70, probably, you know, 67, 68 after this thing's over. But the position-wise, like, Blake Corum's going to be, like, one of the main guys featured on an offense. Roman Wilson's going to be getting a lot of snaps as a rookie. JJ McCarthy is going to be taking probably every snap, depending on what his situation is. So we're going to get to see a lot of these guys at the next level. It's going to be fun to watch.
It is. And something that strikes me too is that, you know, what do you think of, you tell me Mike Sanders still goes to the San Francisco 49ers, or I saw one mock where he slipped in there, I think at 30 to the Baltimore Ravens. And that's just like, how those teams operate. They don't worry about who's X height or who's this fast. Like, they take good football players. And Michigan has, I think, a core group of probably 7 or 8 guys that fit that category in this draft, where they're probably going to slip a little bit because they didn't light up the combine. They didn't maybe exactly light up pro day, but they're going to go to good teams that see their value. You know, I think of a Chris Jenkins as a guy who, you know, could explode at the next level. Roman Wilson, I think, seen a couple mock drafts with him going to the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, that's not a bad place to land. Hot take. You know, Blake Corum, if he goes to the Chargers, like, they've got, you know, there's a couple teams that have openings there. And everyone, unless you have a Christian McCaffrey or you have, you know, the guy at running back, everyone runs a backfield tandem now. So with all of these guys, I mean, again, would I be surprised to see an additional one? And I would say it's probably, if there's going to be a surprise in the first round, it probably is one of Wilson, Jenkins, Sainer still, probably not Colson, probably not Blake Corum. But the consensus on this draft is that once you get outside of like that top 15 or so, prospects like 16 to 50, there's not much separation there. So I think some of these guys are going to go higher than these mock drafts expect. Mikey Sainer still, if he doesn't go tonight, I could see him being one of the first players off the board on Friday when the second round opens up. So to me, that's really how you know. Like, it's team affirming, it's season affirming, in that's how people have treated Alabama players in this draft over the years. That's how they've treated guys from Georgia, LSU over the years. That, you know, when in doubt, like, yeah, I'm the Baltimore Ravens. I'm, you know, I'm the San Francisco 49ers. I'm just going to take good football players. And Michigan has a lot of them in this class. So I think not only are these guys maybe going to go a little bit higher than expected, I think they're going to wind up in really good situations too, which, you know, if you're trying to build a championship organization, adding a national champion to your roster isn't the worst way to go, I guess.
No, I agree. And I think that we're going to see a lot of that late in the draft, which is why I believe Michigan's going to break Georgia's draft record, or at least tie it, which was 15 in 2022. Michigan, with 18 guys that were invited to the combine, a guy or two more that could be possibly picked during this draft. But to put into perspective, right, 11 is the most Michigan's ever had. That was in 2017. They're going to shatter that, you know, pretty easily. Jim Harbaugh, as I said earlier, has had 53 draft picks. He's going to push around 68 in this draft. That would pass Lloyd Carr, who had 62. And Lloyd Carr had 10 first rounders. Jim Harbaugh sitting at 9. He's going to at least tie that with J.J. McCarthy. And again, Lloyd Carr was at Michigan for 13 years. Bo Schembechler had 124 draft picks, 13 first rounders. The draft before 1994, though, was more than 7 rounds. So there was a bigger opportunity for guys to be picked at that point. But the craziest stat to me about how much success Michigan's had in the draft over the years is that Michigan had 18 draft picks in the 7 years leading up to Jim Harbaugh's tenure. They've had 53 in the 8 drafts since. Again, they're going to get close to 70 in 9 drafts. So Michigan has done a great job. They're one of the first, or they're lead the country on having 85 consecutive drafts with a player chosen. But AB, I guess the big question is, will Michigan break the record? Will they tie the record with Georgia?
I asked this in the preview, and what I came up with, and again, I'm no draft expert or analyst. I'm just a fan of it like everyone else is. I got to 14 pretty safely. I think McCarthy, Jenkins, Sain Ristil, Colson, Roman Wilson, Blake Corum, Zach Zinner, Trevor Keegan, Cornelius Johnson, Michael Barrett, Drake Nugent, Braden McGregor, Jalen Harrell, AJ Barner. I think that those guys are in. I think that's 14. To me, it's going to be, I think that record is either going to be tied or broken based on this group of Ladarius Henderson, Trente Jones, Carson Barnhart, Josh Wallace, which would, if that scenario comes to play, you need two of those guys to go. And it's going to be real close, quoting Tony Romo here. Oh, I don't know, Jim. Oh, I say yes. I think they're going to get to 16. Maybe even someone takes a flyer on a James Turner late in this draft just to have them secured. But, man, it's, you know, with those offensive linemen, I think if I had to pick two, I'm going to say Henderson goes and Trente Jones goes, because I think he just got a little more athleticism than those other guys. And I think Ladarius Henderson probably has a chance to be a decent guard, at least as a depth guy. I'm not sure about Josh Wallace, not sure about Carson Barnhart. I think they'll be priority free agents, but it's going to be really close. I mean, if you're someone who, again, Saturday at the draft is weird. They have the chimps making picks from the International Space Station and all these type of weird things. I really think this is going to run through probably close to the 7th round wrapping up before we know if Michigan's broken this record or not.
I agree. And the crazy thing is the Chargers, I believe, have a decent amount of picks. Obviously, there are ties there with Harbaugh. Mike McDonald and the Seahawks, you have John Harbaugh with the Ravens. Like, there are teams that are going to give that benefit of the doubt, as you were talking about earlier, beyond just that these guys won and these guys played a lot of football. Like, even Carson Barnhart has started a ton of games. I mean, no one's getting fired probably over a 7th-round pick in general, but no one's getting fired for pounding the table for Carson Barnhart or, you know, a guy that there's just a ton of film out there on. So I think some of these fringe guys are going to go. And you add in the factor that it's not just that Jim Harbaugh knows these guys would like to, you know, get quality players on his team. He has a chance to help. And again, it's not his sole decision, right, on who they draft, but he has a chance to like break the, like he wants to break the record. So if they have a 7th-round pick at the end and it comes down to it, he may do it. Again, he'll do what's best for his team, but you can't tell me it's not in the back of his mind. But yeah, 7th-round mock draft last week from Dane Brugler of The Athletic had 14 Michigan players going. I don't think that factors in the extra element of, you know, that this team won a national championship and that there are a lot of players with a ton of experience sitting there at the end of the draft that may be worth taking a chance on. So that's kind of where, and I know a lot of people might be listening to this after the at least the 1st round happened. So you'll know, you know, about JJ's fate. If you're listening over the weekend, you know, you may know how many guys are off the board at a certain point. So, but it's going to be exciting. We're going to be busy publishing all these articles that we you know, I still got to write a lot of mine of these draft guys, but it's going to be a fun weekend.
You have time, but you better be ready for Friday and Saturday because we're going to be real busy. I love it, though. You know, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens when the dust clears. So. Lewis Jewelers,
celebrate the moments. Hi, this is Jonathan from Lewis Jewelers. If you're in the market for a diamond, we can make the experience easy and stress-free. Not to mention, we can save you time and money. As a general manager, one of my roles is to hand-select every diamond that comes into our store. Don't shop alone. Come see me or one of my trusted advisors and find the perfect diamond today. Where Ann Arbor gets engaged, Lewis Jewelers.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Excited about this draft. Excited for, again, kind of bittersweet. It's like the unofficial, official close to the Jim Harbaugh era. But, you know, that's what a fitting way to end with your program dominating at the NFL draft. So good times.
And him potentially picking some of your players. So he can juice his numbers a little bit. And one of his big legacy pieces of his legacy is the draft. You know, he's not John Calipari where that's all they did. They obviously won and Calipari won a title as well. You know, certainly part of it is the guys that they've sent to the next level and how they ran the program similar to what an NFL organization does. So that will always kind of be a part of the story there. Let's move on to a little bit of spring ball cleanup, a couple surprises from spring practice. And we'll start with the player or players that surprised us most in spring ball. I want to start with you and get maybe a guy or two that surprised you a little bit in any way, right? And, you know, unless you want me to go because you look like you're thinking.
No, I'm just trying to think of a way to frame it. You know, people came into spring ball really thinking that Michigan needed some sort of savior in the transfer portal at quarterback. And again, we saw one day of spring practice. We don't get to see practices when we go to availability, but I liked what I saw from both Alex Orji and Davis Warren, Warren in particular. You know, I walk away from this feeling, and maybe it's, I don't know if maybe I shouldn't be surprised by it, but when you think about who you could be surprised by on the offensive side of the ball, I thought that the quarterbacks in the spring game in particular, listen, it's not where it needs to be yet, especially with a guy like Alex Orji, but you know, if that's the two that are battling it out, plus, you know, Jack Tuttle and fall camp, I think I'm kind of at peace with that. And, you know, that might bother some people. You know, I'm not going to be shy about what my expectation for this team is. Like, I think they're probably a 10-win football team that finishes just short of winning a Big Ten title, has a chance to beat Ohio State. I think with the construction of this roster, I think they can still find a way to do that with what they have. And if you'd asked me in January or February if that would have been the case at quarterback, I probably would have been a little shakier on that. But I come out of spring ball surprised by maybe how at ease I am with where they're at right now.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And it is interesting. It doesn't seem like they're going to pursue a quarterback. That is maybe a little bit surprising to me as well. So I think quarterback is a great answer there. I guess I'll stick on offense and maybe we'll do one on defense as well. Like this is, again, so it's surprising in any way. This is more of just a player that kind of came out of nowhere. But he's, you know, I know I'm smiling here because I said I was a Breon Ishmael guy earlier in the week. I'm becoming a Deacon Tonielli guy, or Tonelli, sorry. That's how you pronounce it. Guy who's the tight end. Sharon Moore said on John Jansen's podcast this week that he's kind of surged up into that number four spot behind Colston Loveland, Max Bredesen, Marlon Klein, and then it's Deacon Tonelli. But when you factor in that Max Bredesen is a little bit more of a fullback and Michigan plays a lot of tight ends, like that four spot is really kind of like a, maybe spot 3.5. Like, that's a guy that plays a little bit. And then I went down a Deacon Tinelli rabbit hole as we were prepping for the show. I mean, this kid is awesome. He's a Harbaugh guy through and through. Like, they had a meeting. Harbaugh had hour-long meetings with each recruit on their official visits. This is from Zach Libby a year or so ago. And they kept waving off the recruiting staff that said to, hey, the hour's up. Like, we got to get another family in here. They went for multiple hours. Harbaugh kept saying, no, just come back later or whatever, because they were talking football. Deacon Tinelli is in love with football. He said, Jim Harbaugh said about him, he's hardworking, blue-collar guy, loves Michigan since the day he stepped onto campus. You can tell his eyes light up like somebody walking into an all-you-can-eat buffet and going, it's all you can eat? It's all you can eat? Have at it. Said that, and this is a year ago or a year and a half ago, he said that Deacon Tinelli, who's a sophomore now, looked identical to Colston Loveland, damn near identical, really good basketball player, multi-year starter and basketball player. So none of that means that he's a great, but he looked good on his catch from Davis Warren. I thought he turned upfield well and gained 35 yards. And it was kind of one of those bigger plays in the spring game, but he's a surprise to me. I mean, other guys I'm sure surprised me, but I've now become infatuated with Deacon Tinelli.
I mean, his word carries a lot of weight when it comes to all-you-can-eat buffets and football. That's a very specific Venn diagram that I feel like maybe it's not that specific. I mean, football players do like to eat. But, they're in good hands at tight end as well. So
we'll get into position group in a second. But just a little teaser of that. I do feel better about what they have depth-wise at tight end than I did coming into spring. Who's your guy on defense that surprised you, if anybody?
Surprising guy in defense. I would probably say maybe it shouldn't be a surprise, and it's definitely not going to be under the radar anymore. Jair Hill looked pretty darn good when we saw him in the spring game.
Yeah.
DJ Waller now out the door. I feel like he's probably your number two cornerback now, Jair Hill is. And if that's the case, I mean, I think you he's got a little bit of juice to him too. He made the pass breakup along the sideline to Peyton O'Leary, and then he stands over him and kind of flexes and in a game. Yeah, that's probably a 15 yard penalty, but I like the fire. I like the competitiveness. To me, I think probably a bit of a pleasant surprise, freshman to sophomore year, that's a huge leap to make. And it looks like so far he's positioned himself. Probably need a little depth there now that Waller is in the portal, but if he's your number two cornerback, I think I'm pretty okay with that.
I am too. I thought he was really impressive. I liked him a year ago, but he looks even bigger now. And, it takes some time. Like, I remember when we talked to Will Johnson a couple times last summer and then into the season, and you ask about the younger guys, and one of the big things is just mentally, in this system. Like, it's just tough to be a young guy. You have to be a special talent like a Will Johnson. And even then, Will Johnson was kind of platooning for a while his freshman year, and his big break was actually Jamon Green getting – he didn't want this to happen, but getting hit over the head by Sparties. So, and then he started his first game and everything like that. So it takes time for some of these young defensive backs, but Jair Hill has kind of stepped up. I'm going to stick with another quote unquote young defensive back because he's technically still at the tail end here of his sophomore year, but Zeke Berry, like, I just didn't necessarily know one, they would let him with the lack of depth at safety get reps at nickel, and two, that it would sound like he's the favorite to start at nickel. I know Jade McBurrow's in the mix as well. They kind of moved Cody Jones back to safety, it looks like, based on the spring game. And then, of course, he's kind of more of a nickel by trade as is. But Zeke Berry, like, is just an impressive guy. I know we talked about him on Monday coming out of the spring game, but I'm just surprised that, and maybe, I shouldn't have been, but, I just didn't know that he would completely kind of take this opportunity and run with it, as Sharon Moore put it. So I think he's, he's got a bright future here this fall.
Yeah. And I'm not overly surprised by it either. I mean, I think Zeke Berry is a guy that we talked about this on our show the other night, where it is such in a scenario where he doesn't get hurt in camp last year, I think maybe he's a guy that steps into the role that Keon Saab ultimately had. So for me, I'm not super surprised about it. Again, it does feel a little light back there now with some of the injuries they've had and obviously some of the moves in the portal. But Zeke Berry, to me, I mean, there is no one-to-one replacement to Rod Moore on this roster, but I think they do a lot of the same things, and I'm eager for him to get an opportunity.
Other surprises, probably Breon Ishmael. I have to mention him. And, you know, probably Enoeta moving back inside and kind of looking the part there. You know, pretty status quo along the defense, I would say, elsewhere. Probably some more surprises we failed to mention on offense, but maybe surprised that the kicker looks a little bit more shaky than we thought. But I think we kind of came into spring knowing that there was a good chance they would hit the portal for that position. What position group surprised you the most? Either side of ball that you want to start on?
I mean, I hit on it. I cheated with two quarterbacks in the segment before, but
yeah,
I'll say the wide receivers. I think I'm pretty comfortable with the top three that they have, with Frederick Moore, with Tyler Morris, who's their number one right now, with Samaj Morgan. Depth is the question there. But, you know, if we're going into this season where all you need to do is add a couple, you know, maybe some veteran guys, add a bigger body somewhere, I think that they have the goods to do that there as well. Fred Moore in particular was a guy that stood out to me in the spring game, and I think who's poised for a breakout role. So again, really there's not a ton of surprises on offense to me, because everything is sort of wide open. I mean, there's one starter returning from last year's team in the form of Colston Loveland, but I think the top group of wide receivers, I think they're going to be just fine there, to be frank.
Yeah. I'm sure they'll probably add a guy or two, and we'll see like what caliber is that a guy that's going to start, you know, or is it a guy who's more
I would say it's probably like a Daylon Baldwin type. Like that feels sort of like the archetype of what they might add here.
Yeah. I would hope maybe they find somebody that can impact a little bit more. And Daylon Baldwin's my former neighbor, so I like the guy, but yeah, we'll see what they add there. I guess I'll stick with my surprise on offense being that the tight end group looks a lot more deep, because I think Zach Marshall could also play if they needed him to. And then over to the defensive side of the ball, I'd say it's the depth at edge surprised me. And let me pull up the depth chart here right now, because like the fours and fives on that group are like Dominic Nichols, who looked pretty good as a freshman in the spring game, Breon Ishmael, Americ Kumba, who Sharon Moore says has freakish talent for a young guy. But you have Derek Moore, Josiah Stewart, then it's TJ Guy and Cam Brandt, then it's Tyler McLaurin and Keyshawn Bennett, guys who have been around for a long time. And then there's kind of those more talented guys maybe that just don't have the experience that could push, like the guys we mentioned. Dom Nichols looked good, and he's only been here for a couple months. Like, I think the edge room's in really good hands, and Enoeta said it when we were talking to him after the spring game. He said one of the reasons why he moved inside was because they have so many good players on the edge, and they needed more depth at tackle. So it was a little bit more of a question mark coming into spring, because you knew that the two guys they had, you knew that Guy has been around for a while, but it just looks like more guys have emerged, I guess, no pun intended, than maybe I originally thought.
I wrote about this a few months ago, and I feel like they have like 900 some odd snaps to replace on the edge or something, which it's a lot, because, you know, they rotate their edge guys quite a bit. Something, you know, tying this in with NFL draft, something to keep an eye on this weekend. I know there's a lot of people that are, losing Mike Elston hurt. Like he's one of the better developers of talent in the country, but remember the names Marshawn Neyland from Western Michigan and Braden Fisk from Florida State, two guys who started their career at Western Michigan. Neyland finished his career there and played under Lou Esposito. They're going to go pretty high. Maybe one of them sneaks into the first round. I'm not 100% sure what the consensus is on that, but they're going to go pretty high. Guys that developed. So to me, you look at this room that they have, and it's a lot of guys with tools. I mean, Ishmael, he came in at like 210 pounds soaking wet. He's up to like 265 now. Kumba was an international guy that, very raw, still kind of learning the tricks of the trade. Nichols, I know the Lugard that they brought in this last recruiting class. I don't think he's not with them yet, but you look at the guys that they brought in. I don't have a lot of concerns there. To pivot into what my surprise group would be, I think it's the depth at linebacker. I think we came into this spring knowing Ernest Hausman, Jayshon Barham, It's a pretty damn good combo. But Jimmy Rolder looks like a guy that you can put out there and trust to get the job done. Cole Sullivan, I think of all these guys, especially the young guys, we talk about players that are under-recruited that are more ready to play than you think they are. He probably needs to put on another 10, 15 pounds before the season starts, but man, oh man, like he was playing at a different speed out there than those other guys were. And they're in good hands with Jeremiah Beasley. Jaden Hood is a senior who's waited for an opportunity that I thought played fairly well. So, you know, all of a sudden, you know, we come into this thinking, oh, well, Nikai Hill Green's in the transfer portal. They need to go get that guy. No, I don't think so. They're fine here. And I think they're pretty at peace with what they have in that room.
So you're saying you're hoping that Cole Sullivan takes advantage of the all-you-can-eat buffet in Justin Tress's weight room, I would assume.
Yes, absolutely. I'd love to take advantage of it.
True. Yeah, I'm sure you say that now, but you go through one workout probably with those guys and we'd be absolutely dying. But
I'd love to do it once just to say I did.
Write an article about it.
They would laugh. They would laugh so hard. I would be laughed out of the building and probably can't ever come back.
It takes a lot, man. It takes a lot for these. I mean, these guys are it's crazy what they put themselves through, but it pays off on the field. And I agree with you. I think some of these, you know, Cole Sullivan, these guys by fall, they're going to look different. They're going to be a little bit more ready to play. And these first few months just help them, you know, along that curve as they transition to college football players. So yeah, those are our surprises out of spring. I'm sure we'll talk more about spring ball as the weeks go on and we transition here into looking ahead towards fall camp, which is the next thing basically on the schedule. Let's move to Michigan basketball real quick. Michigan gets a commitment from top 300, a three-star guard, Lorenzo Cason out of Florida, a guy who was signed. He was a Florida Atlantic signee under Dusty May, asked out of his letter of intent, opens up his recruitment. Florida gives him an offer. He was between Michigan and Florida, decides to follow Dusty May, and basically said, he told On3's Joe Tipton, he said, I chose Michigan because of Dusty. It's not hard to want to play for a coach who believes in you. He took me with him from FAU, and I think that says enough as it is. The staff is amazing, but I know the culture is going to be even better, as well as the style of play. Just getting up and down in court in transition is a huge differentiator. You have to trust Dusty May's track record when it comes to the guards that he recruits. I mean, those guys, including Akeem Miskadeen, the assistant coach, who seems like he's kind of in charge of guards at this point. But, you know, the guys they brought into Florida Atlantic really blossomed there. Lorenzo Cason, a big-time scorer, also had offers from USF, Seton Hall, Georgia Southern, Murray State, and others. Pretty much, you know, some pretty good mid-major programs there. And then the Florida offer late, as well as Michigan. But averaged 24.5 points a game. Dropped 57 one game last year. But he can get his shot, you know, watching his highlights. I think that's pretty clear.
Feels like another Dusty May guy. He clearly was, given that he was an FAU signee. You know, again, it just goes back to roster construction. And, you know, I'm looking at a scholarship chart right now where you got it pretty, you know, there are currently, quote unquote, 12 spots accounted for. Again, I suspect they're kind of recruiting this roster like the fifth year guys. I'm gonna use my words carefully here. It kind of feels like the fifth year guys might be fallback options. Is that too harsh to say? They're still recruiting this roster like they have technically one spot open, but they're recruiting it like they have three spots available. And it's pretty evenly distributed too. I mean, of all these guys that they brought in, only Reuben Jones is the guy that, you know, his eligibility will lapse after this season. So again, you've got a nice little core group here of 2024 signees or recruits in Darrell Brooks, you know, Justin Pippen, Lorenzo Cason. And people keep saying that it's jarring how many guards are on the roster. Guys, get used to it. Like, you're going to have guys that are quote unquote traditional shooting guards. They're going to be playing the four in lineups. You're going to have lineups where you have two point guards out there. That's how they play. And it's similar to, you know, the offense that John Beilein ran, but it's also a little bit different too. I think it's interesting, you know, not, you know, spinning off of Cason a little bit. During the Knicks for Peja Stojakovic's kid, who was a freshman at Stanford this year, I believe it was. Tall guy, more of the probably guy who's a three or a four in this system. So if they're able to land him again, and we're just wait. Now we wait on Vlad Golden, who it seems like that could come at any time at this point. But
yeah,
you know, the fact that they've found a way to not just piece the roster together, but kind of space it out to where you have some foundational pieces there that you can build towards for next season. Again, I just, I can't speak enough to how good a job they've done in a fairly short amount of time. You know, I know they've extended a lot of offers out, but you know, to have 7-8 commitments in the span of a week, that's putting in the work. And in the case of guys like Walters, some guys are committing that we didn't even necessarily know they were in the mix for. So they've Dusty May just continues to impress.
Yeah. I saw a fan say yesterday that Dusty May is slacking because they didn't get a commitment yesterday. I think it was what, 4 or 5 straight days. It was a span of 72 hours when they had 6 guys commit. And then Kaysen, I believe ended up popping maybe a day after that or whatever it was. Right. But Vlad Golden seems like that one's going to happen. Hell, we may be talking about him on Monday on our show as a commit. You said it, Andre Stojakovic, who could come in and make an impact as kind of a wing or a forward. It feels like that's what they're looking for next. Like, I mean, maybe you take some stud guard if that's out there at some point. And like you said, I mean, it's kind of a, yeah, we have 1 or 2 spots left, but that's kind of a moving target because, you know, Jace Howard's not owed anything. Damari Burnett's not owed anything. George Washington III entered the transfer portal and then decided to come back. Once you enter, you lose your guaranteed spot. So I'm not saying he's not going to get it. I'm just saying it's possible and nothing's completely official yet at this point with the roster. But it feels like they need that guy. And on your point with these guys, are they going to play the 3? Are they going to play the 4? I talked to Sam Walters yesterday, Michigan's signee now, who is transferring in from Alabama, 6'10", great shooter, more of probably a 3. But I said, you know, is there much of a difference between the 3 and the 4? He said, yeah, no, we talked about that. And they said, no, there really isn't. And that, you know, it's kind of interchangeable. A lot of it depends on who the opponent has on the floor, and then they'll, you know, adapt to that. So pretty much, as you said, I mean, a lot of interchangeable parts, a lot of different guys who can handle the ball and shoot. And then you have your Vlad Goldens, who, by the way, his dog's Instagram account put out a video of him shooting the 3 yesterday. So maybe he will be a stretch big. But yes, I do follow his dog now on Instagram.
Let me tell you something about Clayton Safey. He is the most thorough, well-prepared reporter I've ever known. I mean, he's following players' dogs on Instagram, which, hey, you know, that's extremely my lane as well. But I didn't exactly.
Yeah, don't sell yourself short. I feel like, I came across it. I followed it. It's the dog is posting videos of him working out in training. So it's like, all right, this is
of
this
the
is
dog perfect. Working out or of
no, Vlad of working. Vlad, but the dog's in the shot. You got to go to,
is he like spotting him with his little paws?
No, the dog's laying on the ground. Let me find this dog. Well, it's going to take me a second, so let's not find the dog.
Okay, so just a production note. When we do the Vlad Golden show, we need to make sure that we have the dog footage queued.
That's
let's make a note of that.
We will make that happen. So, keep an eye out on that potentially happening, that news dropping with Vlad Golden, heavily favored still, to head to Michigan, which would be a big ad. You know, a guy 7 feet who can defend, can post up, like his, you know, role game is a pick and roll guy, and is going to add a little bit more athleticism to this roster. If there's one thing maybe it's not possessing as much of, it's that. But I think he can add that from a perspective on the back line and can help this team. But Dusty May is still at work, so nothing is set in stone at this point. We'll continue to monitor all of it at thewolverine.com. Clayton Safey, Anthony Broom, thank you so much for watching, listening. Make sure to like the video on YouTube, subscribe to the channel on YouTube as well, and go Lions. Big draft tonight. Anthony and Chris, I believe, will be down in Detroit, so we'll have coverage live from the draft. But stick with us at thewolverine.com. The promo code is UM1 for 2 months of premium access for just $1. get all of our premium content over there, and we will see everyone next time.